السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. This is the big picture and this is AB Dauji. This is the program in which we look at what's happening on the world stage, especially on how events impact on Muslims. We give a few tight claps to Ulu politicians who get too big for their boots and give a boot to the mamparas who pretend to work for world peace while promoting death and destruction. Death and destruction, spreading horror. And speaking of horror, my dear friends, let me tell you about an experience I had this week which was nothing but sheer horror. You know, I've been to many parts of the world. Many of them, of course, extremely dangerous. Bombs were falling as I was entering Baghdad in 2003. Very scary indeed. But the most traumatic place for me is Sparks Road, Overport. Sparks Road, Overport, lurking there ready to pounce on me unexpectedly, is a force more deadly than Darth Vader. And so it came to pass that after searching the whole of Overport, every shop, I couldn't find a particular brand of ilachi syrup that I was told to bring home. Only one shop had it, the one in Sparks Road. I had no choice but to go there. What to do? What to do? So I went to the abaya shop next door to my office. I borrowed an extra large one and a niqab and changed into them in my office. Well, I must say I look quite cute, eh? Maybe a little pregnant, but otherwise quite attractive. I drove up to the store in Sparks Road in my friend's Polo, parked right near the door of the shop and made a dash for it. No chance! A high-pitched scream froze me on the spot. Birds fell out of the trees. Dauji! Hey, Dauji! Yow! Come here! I turned around slowly, and like a zombie, I went over to the house of Halima Khala. Hey, Dauji, where you was? Long time I didn't see you. I answered, Khala, whole year I went to lot places. Dauji, when you going England? I said, why, Khala? You want to go there? Okay, then next time I'll take you, Khala. No, Dauji. Where I can go so far? I got sugar and my arthritis in my legs is so bad and I'm suffering with my heart. So I said, Khala, what do you want to know about England? Dauji, that new supermarket in Sparks Road got Roman creams and Mari and lemon creams, all on special. Why don't you go buy the lot and take with you when you go to England? I was very confused and curious. Khala, why I must buy all that and take it to England? And she said, Dauji, you know everything, but you don't know what's happening in England. I heard my nephew Imran telling his friend on his phone that England got very big biscuit problem. Even the Prime Minister, April or something her name is, she may get fired. What you think, Dauji? They got a biscuit problem. Dauji, my father said, English people like to drink lot tea whole day and must have biscuit. Shame. What are they going to do now, eh? The Queen, what she must eat? Maybe she have to eat queen cake. So bad. Dauji, why you don't do something to help them? Tell Alim Dad to send biscuits to England. I tell you, I was speechless. I slowly walked backwards as she kept speaking. I said, Khala, I think one policeman is about to give me a ticket. And then I ran to the Polo and drove away. Ilachi syrup is not so urgent. Okay, let's look at... Did you get that biscuit story? Eh? Did you get it? All right, never mind. It'll come to you later. So let's look at some strange, wonderful and weird stories that made it into the media. Here are some of these stories, very briefly. Teachers these days have a really tough job. I hear of many reports where a teacher finds it very difficult to discipline a class. Learners are often not serious about their studies, and even in class they don't really concentrate on what is being taught. Some of them have their cell phones on their laps and they are busy with them and not concentrating. Well, looks like that can change in the future, thanks to technology. Now hear this, and this is from the British Independent newspaper. Headbands that monitor concentration by reading brain signals have been trialed on thousands of Chinese school children. The devices could soon be used on millions of students across China, according to the US tech company which designed them. The headbands use electrocephalography sensors, this is EEG sensors, to detect brain activity when the wearer is engaged in a task. The devices were worn by 10,000 school children aged between 10 and 17 during a recent trial in China. Teachers monitored pupils' attention using an app which received information from the headbands. Lights on the front of the devices also showed different colors for varying concentration levels, flagging to staff if students are not paying attention. So you see, from that headband, a signal is sent to an app, and I suppose it's on the desk of the teacher, so he or she can make out whether the learner is concentrating. So there you are, folks. In the old days, the teacher used to shout, "Hey, where's your brains?" Now the teacher knows exactly what the brain is concentrating on. Right, now to the next story. In 3 or 4 weeks' time, there will be a frenzy of shopping for chocolates and flowers. Yes, it will be Valentine's Day, 14th of Feb. And that will open up a whole discussion and heated debate about how this is a silly Western practice and that it is haram and that it's just a big con job and a pure money-making scheme. Every year, the verbal war on social media gets people riled up, worked up. But not in Pakistan this year. Listen to this. A Pakistani university is attempting to rebrand Valentine's Day as Sisters' Day by distributing headscarves and shawls to female students. The University of Agriculture in Faisalabad, in central Punjab province, said the move was an attempt to encourage Eastern culture and Islamic traditions among the youth. Valentine's Day has become increasingly popular in many cities in Pakistan in recent years, but religious groups have denounced it. In 2017, the country prohibited all public celebrations and any media coverage of the event, saying the celebration was not part of Muslim traditions. Zafar Iqbal said this, is the vice chancellor of that university. He said, "In our culture, women are more empowered and earn their due respect as sisters, mothers, daughters and wives. We are forgetting our culture, and Western culture was taking root in our society." The university was mulling a plan to distribute scarves, shawls and gowns printed with the university insignia among female students. The vice chancellor said, "Sisters' Day has been conceived with the aim of promoting respect for women. Unlike in the West, our religious values encourage respect for women and guarantee protection of their rights," Mr. Iqbal said. He said that although some Muslims have turned Valentine's Day into a threat, his thinking is that if there is a threat, convert it into an opportunity. So, dear listeners, what do you think of that? Maybe I just started a whole new debate around this year's Valentine's Day. Ish, I can just hear the WhatsApp warriors ready to do battle. and speaking about respect for women. In India, as you must have already heard, there is a temple called Sabarimala, in the state of Kerala, Sabarimala temple. Ladies are not allowed to enter. But India's Supreme Court in September 2018 ruled, made a decision that women are allowed to enter. That was in September 2018. In January, two ladies, Kanaka Durga and Bindu Amini, Kanaka Durga and Bindu Amini were escorted by police through a huge hostile crowd into the temple. It was regarded as a historic move and celebrated, hailed and celebrated by women all over India. The first woman in history to enter the Sabarimala temple, a victory for women. And one of the ladies, Mrs. Durga, who works for a company owned by Kerala state government, did not tell her family when she visited the Sabarimala temple. She has remained in hiding since the trip, fearing retribution from extremists. But she returned to her husband's home as her holiday leave ended. Her family was previously unaware of her whereabouts. So, dear listeners, how did Kanaka Durga's family celebrate this great victory celebrated by all women virtually all women in India? How did they celebrate? Did they have fireworks? Well, indeed they did have fireworks, because her mother-in-law and other relatives reacted very strongly. They took a wooden plank and gave her a good hiding. She ended up in hospital with minor injuries. Well, there you are, folks. You may want to change the world. You may want to change the world. But you have to change things in your own home first. Right. So, talking about chutney on the legs. Look, I'm not a violent person at all. But I would like to take a plank and give President Pagla a sharp whack on the backside. Yes, folks, Donald Trump never ceases to surprise me with the nonsense that comes out of his mouth or his tweets. He is a serial crap talker. Sorry for that crude term, but I couldn't find any suitably appropriate words. To best describe him. And so, he did that again on Friday. When Pagla was standing for elections to be president in 2016, he kept on attacking Muslims at huge rallies that he attended. Muslims are a danger to America. We have to stop all Muslims from entering the United States until we know what's going on. And so on and so on. And then, when he became president, he named about a half a dozen Muslim majority countries and said that people from there won't be allowed to enter the United States. Now, right now he's got a very big headache. It's 29 days since the United States government has been shut down because the opposition party, the Democrats, who control the money, the purse strings, refused to okay about $6 billion that Trump wants in order to build a big wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. Trump, when he was standing for elections, also said repeatedly that when he becomes president, he will build the wall. Since the Democrats decided not to give him the money, he has addressed the American people, telling them, "We have to have the wall. The wall is necessary to keep America safe because bad people want to come in, criminals, drug dealers, and even terrorists." Of course, there is no evidence at all that a single terrorist has entered the United States via Mexico. But the truth does not stand in the way of Donald Trump's tweets. Okay, so let's look at the big picture. He said that Muslims are terrorists and shouldn't be allowed to enter. And he said that he needs the wall to stop terrorists from entering. So, what is the word? Voila! Voila! That's right, a stroke of genius. Say that there is now proof that Muslim terrorists are entering via Mexico. Right? That's what he said. How did he do that? With his latest tweet. That's how. Showing that Muslims are entering via Mexico, providing the evidence. So listen to this. And this is from the Huffington Post. With no resolution in sight in his fight for a wall on the southern U.S. border, President Donald Trump on Friday morning promoted an unfounded claim from a conservative newspaper purporting that Islamic prayer rugs have been found scattered along the Mexican border. The claim implies that a significant number of Muslims are illegally entering the country through the southern border with Mexico, and taken together with his other comments about the border, that they are dangerous. Trump cited the Washington Examiner in his tweet about the supposed rugs. The site published a story on Wednesday featuring a video interview with an unnamed woman who said that although she has never seen Middle Eastern people along the border, she has seen what she described as prayer rugs. So what do we have here, dear listeners? A rancher who lives near the border of the United States and Mexico said to a right-wing newspaper, the Washington Examiner, that she saw rugs that were abandoned by people who had climbed over the border. She said that they were prayer rugs, that is, a musalla. She didn't say why she concluded that they were musallas, and she also said that she didn't see anyone that looked like an Arab in that area at all. And that's it. And the real evidence is that many of the people who come from South America to the border, they carry small rugs, thick rugs or carpets with them to put over the barbed wire fence so they don't get injured while crossing over. And that's it. But no. This auntie called it prayer rugs, musallas, and Trump grabbed it with both hands and he tweeted, "Border rancher says, we found prayer rugs out there." It's unreal. Unreal. Muslims are crossing the Mexico-U.S. border and leaving behind their musallas? Let's get back to that story after the break. Back, the program is called The Big Picture, and before the break I was telling you about Donald Trump tweeting that he had evidence from some obscure lady near the Mexican border that Muslims are crossing the Mexican-U.S. border and leaving behind their musallas. So let's look at the big picture again. So a very dangerous Arab terrorist decides to go to America from maybe Jordan or, I don't know, where, Syria or somewhere. And he's there to carry out, he wants to go to America to carry out a dangerous mission, put a bomb or something. So he somehow crosses the Atlantic Ocean, makes his way to Mexico, of course carrying his musalla, and then he gets to the border fence, he makes his Maghrib Salah, and then leaves his musalla rug right there and crosses over. What's the idea? Maybe the musalla is too heavy to carry with him. It may hold him back on his mission to bomb New York. Or is it that when he enters America, he will not have to make salah again, so he doesn't need that musalla? Can you see how ridiculous this is? But no, that doesn't stop Pagla from repeating this bull. And he knows that his supporters will swallow it all, hook, line and sinker, the whole rod and the reel. Muslim terrorists left the evidence at the border proving that they entered America. Be scared, people. Very scared indeed. Good heavens, you know, I keep wondering every now and then how from a population of around 320 million Americans, the best person they could pick as their president, the most powerful person in the world, is this brainless clown. The mind, she boggles, senor. The mind, she boggles, senor. And let me boggle you even more. It's absolutely shocking that in this day and age, when people are said to be more advanced, more civilized, where we have moved on from those bad old days of slavery in the United States and racial discrimination and bigotry and so on, it seems that it's perfectly acceptable to speak about Islam and Muslims in the vilest way. It's normal. It's sort of par for the course. Hate speech against Muslims, it's fine. No condemnation, no backlash, no sense of outrage from even the liberal left. In Europe, it's in overdrive. Many countries have elected rabidly right-wing governments, and they are on a campaign against the niqab, the hijab, the azan, the building of new masajid, and so on. There's also a war on chocolate. Did you hear that? A war on chocolate. For me, that's a very sensitive subject, dear listeners. I'm a chocoholic. That's right. An addict. Can polish off a whole slab one evening. Okay, here's the story. Reported in the Israeli newspaper, Haaretz. A few weeks ago, Toblerone made international headlines. The popular triangular chocolate bar that had been halal certified in April 2018 became the target of concerted campaign by far-right groups. Several European far-right party members called for a mass boycott of Toblerone after belatedly discovering its halal certificate. They introduced the hashtag boycott Toblerone, which quickly spread to other European countries, including Austria, the UK, France, Germany, and the Netherlands. Prominent far-right figures like Jörg Muthen, a high-ranking member of the Alternative for Germany party, criticized the Toblerone news as evidence of Europe's stealth Islamization in action. That means by secret, we're going to change Europe into Islam. The vice chair of the far-right cross-European parliamentary group, known as Europe of Nations and Freedom Group, Harald Vlimsky warned against creeping Islamization. He wrote on Twitter, "We have always warned against this development. Creeping Islamization has to be unconditionally stopped. I can confidently refrain from halal chocolate. You too?" While halal means that a food has been prepared according to Muslim ritual ethics and thus not include prohibited substances such as pork products or alcohol, for the far right, this was a sign of Islamization. For Toblerone, nothing had changed in the process of production since the Illinois-based producing company, Mondelez, had already had high standards of food safety. While many commentators ridicule the boycott campaign, the actual debate is not about the actual food and the purported health impact of going halal. The idea of boycotting halal food is closely connected to the campaign gaining strength across Europe to ban halal and Jewish kosher slaughtering. Belgium, Slovenia, Iceland, Sweden and Norway already ban ritual slaughter. restrictions are also in place in Germany, France, Spain, Austria and the Baltic states, Finland, Poland and Netherlands, Slovakia and Greece. Bearing in mind the relative small Jewish population of most of these countries, except for France, and the determined focus of today's far right, the primary target of these ever stricter regulations is Muslims. The leader of the most well-known Czech far-right party, Tomio Okamura, who has compared Islam to Hitler-style Nazism, once explained this strategy in a 10-point program of how citizens can fight Islamization. His own country boasts a Muslim community that makes up a bare 0.002% of the population. And he's so worried about this, these Muslims. He said, "We can show our discontent by not buying any more from Muslims. Every kebab we buy is just another step towards the burqa." Another recommendation in his 10-point was to go for a walk with dogs and pigs in front of mosques and Muslim centers in order to show them that they are unwanted. A chapter of the Austrian far-right Freedom Party once organized a campaign against a local Muslim butcher with the slogan, "No to the Muslim Butcher." Previously, another campaign was launched against a global grocery chain Spar to remove halal meat they had introduced on sale. And it's clear what these activists want: to create conditions that are sufficiently uncomfortable to push Muslims to finally leave the country, to get rid of Muslims. Obviously, if you have no food to eat, you cannot survive. If you have a limited source of food compared to the general population, you are living under institutionalized discrimination and intimidation. This is the reason why the Islamophobic industry is so obsessed with the notion of halal as a campaign. Deleting halal food equalizes the erosion of Muslim life. You see, it has an impact on Muslim life. Threatening Muslims in economic terms becomes a similarly useful tool for the right to get rid of Muslims. If ethnic grocery stores, which often offer halal products, are also boycotted, as Okamura suggested, many self-employed Muslims will lose their economic capacity. It's not much of a stretch to see a line between the call not to buy from Muslims or to boycott those companies that accommodate Muslim beliefs in their products and the anti-Jewish boycotts orchestrated by the Nazi regime. That boycott was initiated no less than 3 months after coming to power in Germany under the slogan, "Don't buy from Jews." The call for a boycott of halal certified food mirrors the same pattern of thought of Nazism that wanted to wipe out the Jewish existence in Europe. Today, it is white supremacists that try to turn the clock back and reverse the Muslim presence in the West. Destroy the foundations for readily available food conforming to Muslim beliefs and culture is an attempt to dress in health-conscious clothes, the strategy of the far right to suffocate and eventually extinguish Muslim life in Europe. Wow, very powerful stuff there from the Haaretz newspaper of Israel. So, there you have it, dear listeners. The war on Toblerone. The war on kebabs. All this in order to stop the Islamization of Europe. These kebabs who are boycotting are really desperate to get rid of Muslims. So the best way is to starve them for what they like to eat. Now listen, you racist idiots, you will fail. Right now in Britain, for example, the national dish of fish and chips has been overtaken by chicken tikka. You know, my group was in Spain a few weeks ago. All over the place you see very short-looking Bangladeshi fellas handing out handbills for takeaways. Sir, we have very delicious butter chicken and karai gosht. Come try, sir. You know, all over Europe, halal food outlets are very busy. So, dear silly mamparas, forget it. You will fail. Toblerone. You know, I can polish off one of those huge ones you find at the duty-free shops. Okay, here's a story that has gripped the media for the past few weeks. Let me read to you from the website News Hub. news hub. And it says here, Rahaf Mohammed, the Saudi teen who was granted asylum in Canada last weekend, has posted photos of herself enjoying a glass of wine, a cigarette, and bacon. And these photos were posted on Snapchat. Ms. Mohammed, who's 18 years old, was granted asylum after fleeing Saudi Arabia, where she feared being killed after being disowned by her family for not conforming to the country's strict rules. Another photo showed a Starbucks coffee cup sitting on Ms. Mohammed's lap. Her legs seemed to be bare from the knees down in a dress that would have broken dress code rules in Saudi Arabia. She posted to her personal Twitter account on Saturday, thanking those who supported her journey out of Saudi Arabia. "I would like to thank you people for supporting me and saving my life. Truly, I have never dreamed of this love and support. You are the spark that motivates me to be a better person." Ooh, isn't that wonderful, eh? It brought tears to my eyes. What a beautiful story. What was it she said? "You see, the spark that motivates me to be a better person." And now she is such a better person, so improved, drinking booze, smoking, and eating bacon. What more can you have out of life? Shame. Her family was so bad, stopping her from having all these things, oppressing her. She couldn't take it anymore. The desire for the great things to improve her life, dope, scaves, and pork, brings tears to my eyes. And because she was deprived of all these things, and oh, by the way, just a thought came to mind while I was saying that. Does she feel so free now that she doesn't have to wash her bum anymore after going to the toilet? Yes, as I was saying, people in the West felt sorry that she was so horribly deprived of these things that they, that is the Canada, gave her asylum. She is a celebrity, oppressed no more. But wait, I like it. So let's see if you are living in oppressed conditions. Will Canada take you in? The Palestinians, the Rohingyas, the Syrians, the Uyghurs, the Yemenis? Wow! Thank you, Canada! I will inform all these people what was it that Rahaf said. "You are the spark that motivates me to be a better person." And she addressed media in Canada following her arrival and said that her goal is to help to support the freedom of more women like herself. She said, "I will work in support of freedom for women around the world, the same freedom I experienced on the first day I arrived in Canada." But wait, ladies. First, you have to declare that you want to smoke, you want to have a beer, and eat bacon and eggs, and take off your ijar. Ish, sorry, but that's what you have to write on your visa application. Well, it looks like there won't be a flood of refugees seeking asylum in Canada on those terms. And speaking about Syria, let me tell you about the horror that Syrians are experiencing right now. You know, I was in Lebanon a few weeks ago. We went into the mountains to a snow resort. Before going up there, we were taken to a ski shop. And there we put on heavy jackets over the jackets that we already wore. We put on heavy pants over our pants, and big boots and gloves and woolies and hats. And then we were taken up to the mountain resort. The snow was deep. But even with our heavy clothing, we were quite frozen whizzing around on the snowmobiles. It was such great fun jolting in the snow. But, dear listeners, it was no fun for other people in Lebanon. There are over 1 million Syrian refugees in Lebanon. I was there about 2 years ago when I organized with Darul Ehsan of Mufti Bayat humanitarian aid for the people in one part of Lebanon called the Bekaa Valley. It was absolutely heart-wrenching to see the refugees crossing from Syria with nothing, just their children and a few packets of their belongings. At that time also it was snowing, bitterly cold. They reached the refugee areas and were given by people from the local town some planks and some sheets of plastic. With that, they constructed their flimsy homes. That barely kept out the biting cold winds. When we left Lebanon a few weeks ago, now I'm talking about my group, it was very cold. But since then, heavy snowstorms, blizzards, torrential rains have battered these camps. Hundreds of these plastic structures have been blown away. And those that remain are flooded. You cannot imagine the misery, especially for the children and old people. It's an absolute horror story. Here's an extract from an Al Jazeera report. They continue to brave harsh winter months in camps across the country, and in particular, the colder Bekaa Valley, home to more than 340,000 Syrian refugees. An elderly woman in her 60s said, as she sat bent at the entrance of a tent outside Bar Elias camp, "We are never warm. It's always freezing. Every night, I pray to God that when I open my eyes next morning, it's finally morning." Every night I pray to God that when I open my eyes, next, it's finally morning. The nights are bitterly cold. What more can I say? Make dua for these people. They escaped from the horror of Syria, and now they are in another hell. A horror of freezing to death. More than 15 children have died so far from the unbearable cold. Horror story, I told you. Right, I think we're coming to the end of the program, so let's see what I've got for you. A little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, hey? Okay. Right, here's a question. What does a wife tell her husband in England just before they go to sleep? "Hey, good night, my dear. Sweet dreams. Sweet dreams." What does a wife say to her husband in Germany? "Gute Nacht, mein Lieber." What does a wife say to her husband in Italy? "Buona notte, mia cara." Buona notte, mia cara. What does a wife say to her husband in France? "Bonne nuit, ma chérie. Bonne nuit, ma chérie." What does a wife in South Africa say to her husband when they go to bed? "Hey, are you sure you locked all the windows and doors properly, eh?" This is A.B. Dawji, continuing on Al Ansar after the 12 o'clock news. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.